Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. Big Thursday show coming at you. You don't know who my co-host is, but you know what? You're gonna like it, cause it's Ben Dixon back in the studio. Ben, how's it going?
It's going well, John. How are you, man? It's good to be back.
I'm good. Good to have you back. It's been a little bit since we spoke. How's the show been going?
Going good, man. We're having a great time every morning right here on YouTube at 8 a.m. Eastern Standard. You like how you like that?
That was pretty smooth, actually. I didn't expect it to be so smooth, but that was good. I like that.
I didn't even know I was gonna do it, but thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it.
That's awesome. No, we're always glad to have you here. We're glad to have all of you out there here as well, regardless of what platform you're on. Thank you for being here. And if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button, sharing the stream, that would be great so that people know we're live. And you might be thinking, wait, why would I have to do that? There are notifications, surely. Yeah. Yeah, trust those. Trust those to live your life with. But anyway, we have a lot that we're gonna be talking about through the course of the next 90 minutes or so, including kids and COVID. We're gonna be talking about the next January 6th rally in DC, cops being cops, the worst teacher in the world. We got a lot of fun stuff. But really fast, before we get to that, Ben, new Matrix is coming up, trailer dropped. What do you think?
I think this was the best thing that we've gotten so far in 2021. So I've watched it at least 20 times since it came out this morning.
Wow. Okay, so I'm a bit of a nerd. I gotta say, I'm a little bit more hyped about the trailer for The Wheel of Time, which is a show coming out in November. But it does, but the next Matrix does look like it's gonna be good. And what I like is it doesn't look like any of the other ones.
That's right.
Like visually, like the action looks awesome, but it's not just black latex and neon green. It's a nice change.
Let me ask you a difficult question.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the fact that there's no Lawrence Fishburne? There's no Agent Smith?
Too tight. To be determined, right? I want to withhold judgment until I see it and then, you know, let it loose. And I hope there's a good reason he's not there. Or either one of them.
I hope that they're just hiding it, but how could you not have him in? Like, and he was in John Wick. It's not like they're not talking.
Right.
That seems weird to me. I don't know. The guy they got, who's like sort of playing seemingly Morpheus's role, he's a great actor. He's gonna be great and everything. But like, Lawrence Fishburne is the Matrix.
That's right. I don't know.
Feels weird. Anyway, you know, as much as I would love to do 90 minutes on the Matrix, and maybe we can talk about the sequels and how I think that they're kind of underrated. There's some good sequences there. We do have to get to the news though, so we're gonna do that. Wait, hold on a second. Hold on. So someone who put this in my comments? Lawrence Fishburne refused to buy Girl Scout cookies from me as a child, and that's why he's not in it.
There it is.
He was trying to stay trim to be Morpheus. Obviously, it didn't work out in the long run, as it hasn't for so many of us. But anyway. Okay, but in the Matrix, you can look any way you want. Okay, so here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna talk about the news. Let's jump into it. Let's talk about kids and COVID, two things that very much don't go together, shouldn't go together. But don't worry, we were told from very early on in this pandemic that while we might have to worry, maybe, kids really don't. All the way back on August 5th, a guy who used to be president said, this thing is going away. It will go away like things go away. My view is that school should be open. If you look at children, children are almost, I would almost say definitely, but almost immune from this disease. So few, hard to believe. I don't know how you feel about it, but they have much stronger immune systems than we do somehow for this. They don't have a problem. So President Trump told us not to worry about it. And ever since then, the right has run with that, with people like Tucker Carlson doing rants about COVID masks being child abuse and encouraging his viewers to call the cops when they see kids wearing masks. But remember, Tucker Carlson doesn't like it when you get in his face in public. He just wants you to do it to other people. He also did a rant about how the COVID vaccine is dangerous for kids and big tech is lying to you about that. Let's see, he also said to children, the vast majority of young and middle-aged adults and the vast majority of teachers, the coronavirus poses virtually no threat. So look, that's not just kids don't have to worry. That's middle-aged adults and teachers who in my experience tend to be elderly, they don't have to worry about it either. And it wasn't just Tucker Carlson. Laura Ingraham also said that vaccinating kids against COVID-19 is disgusting. Well, I think that you probably know where I'm going with this. We had in the last week over 250,000 cases of COVID in children, the highest ever on record. It has skyrocketed during this most recent wave. And we're gonna get into, it gets even worse than just the cases. But Ben, you know, I know you have kids. Yeah. How do you feel about this, about the way the right has messaged around COVID and what we're seeing now when it comes to kids and COVID?
I honestly think on a regular basis how we have to start calculating for irrational actors. Most of our social sciences say that we can make predictions based on rational actors. I think we have to make predictions based on people who are suspended with all sense of self-preservation for themselves, but also their children, because sending kids out into this pandemic and giving parents a false sense of security is leading to the deaths of not only children, but we saw in Miami-Dade County, 13 staffers, all of them African-Americans, died of COVID-19. And so it's just really, it's kind of an absurd moment in American history, and that's putting it mildly.
Yeah, you know, we're very used to in America that like public school teachers, it's like a joke that they'll never get paid despite doing a very difficult job. I was watching a Kindergarten Cop last week, and it's just constant jokes about how it's the most difficult job ever and they don't get paid. So that had become a joke. To then be totally cool with them dying. Like I think back on the teachers I had, I would say mainly the most common thing was a 60-plus-year-old woman to not care if they die. And again, like they're not just saying kids are less likely to die of COVID, which is still true. It's not the only consideration, but it's still true. They're saying teachers don't have to worry about it. And you're totally right. Teachers have been dying. In Texas, there were a bunch of teachers that died, and they just don't care. Like, why would we expect that they would care about public school teachers, especially public school teachers who are black? The idea that Tucker Carlson is like, he's just racked with guilt about the fact that they would die of COVID just seems so ridiculous to imagine.
Right, and that's the thing. It's not only do they not have any concern or regard for human life, they have no hesitation about profiting off of it, because a lot of these narratives are lucrative, right? A lot of the things that they promote, these conspiracy theories, they get a lot of clicks. And so they not only don't care, but they don't mind making money off of it.
Yeah, 100%. So we showed you the cases, 250,000 kids in 1 week. Well, let's go beyond that. So nearly 30,000 kids went to the hospital for COVID in August, and pediatric hospitalizations driven by a record rise in coronavirus infections among kids have swelled across the country, overwhelming children's hospitals and intensive care units in states like Louisiana and Texas. So again, yes, they are better protected against COVID, but 30,000 went to the hospital. That's not good. And by the way, if the ICUs and all that get overwhelmed, that doesn't just mean that kids with COVID might not have ventilators waiting for them and the doctors the care that they need. It means that kids suffering from all sorts of other accidents also might not be able to access the care that they need. And we know what's causing this. It's vaccination rates. So when you compare, as they do in this chart, the 10 states that are most vaccinated and those who are least vaccinated, we're talking about adults being vaccinated here. There's a huge difference there, both for the adults and for the kids. The kids are still far less likely to go to hospitals than adults, but it's rising fast. And you can see there, based on that, the kid hospitalization rate is kind of close to the adult vaccinated hospitalization rate. So we're like basically taking away that advantage by not getting vaccinated. And during the summer surge that we're experiencing, the hospitalization rate was about 10 times higher in unvaccinated adolescents as those who've been vaccinated. We have like an 11-year-old in Texas got COVID just a few days after returning to in-person learning at school. She ended up on a ventilator with the doctor saying, or the mother saying, her lungs are going through hell. They've been doing breathing treatments on her every 4 hours, and then they suction her lungs out at the same time. 11-year-old.
John, I just
having her lungs suctioned.
And this is repeating itself across the country. I think the media has done, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, how protected we are from seeing some of the trauma that's happening. But this trauma is real. And can you just imagine being a parent and having had that sense of security be instilled into you by your political leaders, only to have your child have their lungs pumped? I really think our politicians need to take in consideration that they should not be so cavalier with the lives of the children of their constituents.
Yeah. Yeah, and it would be one thing if now or before they had been saying, okay, we have to get kids back to school. It's just too important. Them not being there is dangerous or whatever. And so what we're going to do is we're going to send them back to school, but we're going to make it as safe as possible. You are not going to be working in school if you're not vaccinated. As soon as the kids can get vaccinated, we're going to vaccinate them. We're going to do small class sizes. We're gonna have everyone be masked. We're gonna keep them apart. We're gonna put in extra money for filtration equipment and all that stuff. Because yes, we have to have them back in school, but we're not monsters. We don't want them to die. Except of course, that hasn't been the strategy at all. Virtually every one of the right wingers that's pushing for kids to go back to school are also saying, you shouldn't get vaccinated. You definitely shouldn't be required to wear masks. Just pack them in there and let COVID run rampant. As always, and it seems most egregious when you're talking about kids, it is indistinguishable from actively advocating on behalf of COVID, trying to create environments where it's most likely that it'll spread.
John, thank you for saying it so succinctly, because let's just cut to the chase. They are pro-COVID. These policies, I don't care if it's intentional or unintentional, of ignorance or malevolence, the results are the same. We are in the mu variant of COVID-19. They're gonna keep this foolish. And when I say they, I do very specifically mean Republican governors like Ron DeSantis in Florida, the governors in Alabama, Mississippi, Greg Abbott in Texas. And they're not alone, right? We have Democratic governors who are pushing kids back into school. But the thing is like, by not requiring masks, by pushing against the vaccine, and by pushing even against social distancing, we have seen Republican governors actively enact policies that are pro-COVID.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%, 100%. And we can't focus on everyone that dies as a result of COVID, but we can point out that, and I just did like a casual Google search of the last week, basically. Two kids in South Carolina died. One was 9 years old, one was 15 years old. In Mississippi, a baby died of COVID. That was the 7th child death so far in Mississippi. This week in Georgia, a 9-year-old died. There was a less than 12-year-old in LA County that died recently. But don't worry, all the people that you trust in media and politics tell you that it's never gonna affect them. And for the families of those kids that have died, it is a huge consolation that the rates of child death are lower. How does that work? Like, yeah, it is rare, and it is still worth doing something about. Like, but again, I remain so stupidly naive. Like, I thought the kids' stuff would get through to them. Like, sure, they'll throw their lives away because they can't bear to have a bit of cloth on their face for a bit, but surely they won't let the kids be killed in school. And I guess I just forgot decades of school shootings and how completely apathetic the right has been about that. The pro-life party, which has never been able to even sufficiently pretend to care about kids getting gunned down. Yeah, they're really gonna care if some 9-year-old spends a month on a ventilator and then dies in a hospital. I don't know why I expected that. Any thoughts about this? Any final thoughts?
I have an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old. And I just want to send my thoughts out to the families that have lost those precious children. But I also really need America to understand that once they turned a blind eye to what happened to those children at Sandy Hook, we should have known that we had crossed the Rubicon a long time ago, and this was an inevitable outgrowth of the ignorance that is required to sustain this broken system.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're 100%. The fact that they didn't care, and that they and tons of them still love the guy who made his entire career attacking the families. Like, that was when the all mass shootings are false flags really sort of took off. That's what the movement is. By the way, apparently the president has signed an executive order to require all federal executive branch workers to be vaccinated, and expects that standard will be extended to employees of contractors that do business with the federal government. It is still not much, but I'm sure he'll be attacked as Mao for that. Mm-hmm. But we can go a lot further. We can expect teachers to be vaccinated. Like, imagine going to school. There are places they don't even make people who work in nursing homes get vaccinated. We're an insane, self-destructive country.
Absolutely.
Anyway, we are gonna take our first break though. When we come back, there are worries about a rally that's gonna be taking place in DC soon. We're gonna be giving you details on that. And will someone speak up for Robert E. Lee? Well, we've got two. They are kind of dunces, but they're going to be defending Robert E. Lee after this. Before we jump back in the news, did want to let you know that once our show is done, and don't worry, we still got an hour and 10 minutes. Indisputable is going to be coming up with Dr. Rashad Ritchie, the White House honored Dr. Rashad Ritchie, by the way. The namesake of Dr. Rashad Ritchie Day in Georgia, by the way. So he will be hosting with Ben Carollo. Joe Collins III will also be on. So that'll be coming up at youtube.com/indisputable TYT, as well as twitch.tv/TYT in not that much longer. By the way, did want to let you know that apparently the multicast of Indisputable on the Damage Report YouTube channel will be ending at the end of this week. Starting Monday, September 13th, the live stream for Indisputable will disappear from our channel. What that means is you can still watch it. You just have to go to Indisputable. That's youtube.com/IndisputableTYT. And if you do that, you never have to miss a bullpen. You never miss a I Wish Karen Would. It's all there, freely available, but the multicast will be ending. Okay, everybody, with that, why don't we talk about some more news? Some of those aggrieved over the arrests of people for what happened on January 6th in DC have got a new rally coming. It is the Justice for J6 rally that's gonna be in DC on September 18th. And they've had some support rhetorically. People who in elected office are also speaking out in defense of those who broke the law and were rightly arrested. But that does not mean that they're going to the rally. So as of right now, Representatives Marjorie Taylor Greene and Madison Cawthorn are expected to skip the Justice for J6 rally on September 18th, according to their spokespeople. Now, notably, they're being super hush hush about this. These are hardly representatives that are shy in talking about the political prisoners from January 6th. So why are they only putting out sort of wishy-washy statements from their spokespeople? And why, when you reach out to Representative Matt Gaetz, do they not respond to requests for comment? I mean, consider that just a little bit ago, Gaetz and Green attempted to basically break those people out of a jail that they were visiting. They did their press conferences. They even brought Louis Gohmert. They brought their big guns. And now this rally is coming on September 18th. And Ben, they're not confirming that they're actually gonna go. What do you think about that?
I think that I think that their handlers have told them that this is a bridge too far. They're still trying to finagle their way out of what actually happened on January 6th and the culpability that so many Republicans have to that terrorist insurrectionist event. And so they can't really go this far, but I'm quite sure they're going to have their fingerprints on this some way, somehow.
Yeah. So you might have answered in advance my next question, but so should we be happy? Should we celebrate even a tiny little bit that the craziest people, at least Marjorie Greene, Madison Cawthorn's pretty terrible too, that there is apparently sort of a line that they're not going to go to this thing, or at least they won't confirm that they're going. Is that progress?
Only in so much as they are able to survive that decision, because as we saw with the vaccine, Donald Trump, his entire support base at that rally turned on him and booed him. So there's a likelihood that Marjorie Taylor Greene can herself become not radical enough for these radical extremists on the right.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. Like, if they turn on like Greene and Cawthorn and Gaetz, what do they have? Like, because they're gonna want something crazier. They're not going back to like Lindsey Graham after that. So what monster are they gonna find? I don't know, maybe someone who'll be speaking at it. But in any event, as of right now, law enforcement officials are apparently bracing for the possibility of violence at this event. They have this internal Capitol Police memo that CNN has looked at that says, that's funny, that says that they are considering raising the fence again. So that's what they're saying. Now, bear in mind, The lead organizer for the rally, Matt Brainard, says there's gonna be no violence coming from his group and that the event would be very peaceful. If there is any, it'll be Antifa, don't worry. I'm kidding, he didn't say that, but they definitely will if it happens. He also tweeted on Wednesday that all members of Congress are welcome to speak at the rally. He says this is a completely peaceful protest and we have told people that when they come, we don't wanna see any messaging about the election. We don't wanna see any messaging on t-shirts and flags or signs about candidates or anything like it. Although they might have some faces because they're also calling this a Justice for Ashley Babbitt rally, some of them. So they're saying there's nothing to worry about. Should we celebrate that?
All right, to be determined, right? To be continued. Let's see what happens. But I do think it would be wise for the Capitol to take every precaution necessary because these are the same people who came on January 6th and we saw what happened there. So let's not take their word for it. Let's do our due diligence and be prepared.
Yeah, and look, we have a couple other little notes of how this might get bad, but I'm kind of feeling like totally take all the precautions, and I think they will. I think the Capitol Police is going to want to. They're going to err on the side of overreacting because they really didn't overreact last time. So I think that that's probably a good thing. I'm thinking that this might fall apart. I think that a lot of them are going to be worried about getting scooped up if there's chaos. I don't think they want to end up in jail like those on January 6th, and so I'm kind of feeling like it might fall apart now. Bear in mind, we are still following. We're covering it. We have been, and we will continue to, because we are worried about it. We don't want violence. Certainly, we are against that. But and acknowledging that, I also, in advance of the 6th, I did not expect it to get as bad or as big or as chaotic as it was. I mean, maybe some people predicted that. I did not. So I don't know. I'm wondering how many people will show up to this, knowing that there's gonna be a big Capitol Police presence, knowing that they've got to be ready to lock up people if it does get chaotic. What are you thinking?
No, I think you're exactly right. If this crowd is emboldened to be bigger on September, was it the 18th versus January 6th?
18th.
Then I believe we have a far bigger problem than what we understand. Now, I don't want to minimize January 6th, but if this has grown since people have gotten sentences, since people have gotten arrested, all the people the FBI are investigating, if they are undaunted by that, then yeah, we really need to reevaluate who we consider to be the clear and present threat to this country.
100%. And let's see, at least one Proud Boy leader has encouraged followers from across the country to show up at the event. Others are saying it's a false flag designed to trap supporters. Okay, everything is a false flag. I had a movie night, or did I? Maybe it was a false flag. Everything is, it's fun to think this way. Anyway, meanwhile, White Lives Matter is advertising global demonstrations for September 18th and has been supportive of the January 6th insurrectionists online, but it doesn't have a DC chapter. Oh God, can you imagine the people that are part of that group? But yeah, they're probably representatives. Anyway, so there is some concern, not just about the DC branch, but there are other groups that are saying we're gonna do things in state capitals. I know I've heard a little bit about in California, they're concerned about demonstrations that might happen in Sacramento. If I was in like Portland, I'd probably be worried too. So just everyone bear in mind, September 18th, I'm actually gonna be away. But anyway, it could be serious, we'll see. But it does look like they're taking it more seriously this time. Any final thoughts?
Keep your eyes open.
Yeah, not a bad idea. Okay, with that, let's have a brief bit of fun, or what passes for fun in American politics. We're gonna jump right into this video.
Robert E. Lee is a towering figure in American history. Of course, he fought for the Confederacy, he owned slaves, but he also played an indispensable role in post-war Reconstruction that was just instrumental in reuniting the country. In fact, Lee has long been respected and even admired by Northerners and Southerners alike.
Bill. Anyway, so Robert E. Lee's statue was taken down. It was cut to bits, which was a nice added little bit of fun. It was the biggest Robert E. Lee, I think the biggest Confederate statue that has been taken down so far. And that's good, but unfortunately, that can't happen without people like Laura Ingraham. And we'll get to Donald Trump taking this opportunity to talk about how awesome this guy that massacred his fellow Americans, owned people. Well, yeah, that's true, but he did other good stuff too. I don't know. I personally think that you had to be a really nice guy to make up for owning slaves. Ben, what do you think?
That Laura Ingraham threw in there, sure, he was a mass murderer. Sure, he was a slave owner, but it's doing a lot of work there, Laura. But she's there for that purpose of laundering white supremacy into the mainstream through Fox News. And I'm glad in terms of this specific monument, it's enough. The Confederacy lost. I think we've entertained losers long enough. Let's remove all of them. And matter of fact, why do we even allow that flag of treason to be flown in this country? What do you think happens to people who fly the Nazi flag in Germany? This was treason, and a lot of people died because of it. So yeah, govern yourselves accordingly.
Yeah, and in the chat they're asking, yeah, when did that statue go up? Why did that statue go up? It's a good point. Yeah, there was a lot of renewed interest in figures like that a whole long time after the conflict they lost, that they started and they lost. It was one of the biggest historical instances of F around and find out. They did. They did. Anyway, yeah, so look, she's not the only one. Her take is dumb. Yeah, we never would have reunited without him. I mean, you know, if they hadn't tried to split the country in half and killed hundreds of thousands of Americans, I guess we wouldn't have had to reunite. That would have been cool. So that's a dumb historical take. But she can't look like the dumbest for long because Donald Trump put out a statement. You can see here, official Save America letterhead and all that. We're not gonna read the whole thing, but here's what he said. Robert E. Lee is considered by many generals to be the greatest strategist of them all. President Lincoln wanted him to command the North, in which case the war would have been over in one day. Robert E. Lee instead chose the other side because of his great love of Virginia and owning people, and except for Gettysburg, would have won the war. He should have been remembered as perhaps the greatest unifying force after the war was over, ardent in his resolve. He definitely didn't write this, by the way. Dude did not use the word ardent. He didn't do it. Anyway, ardent in his resolve to bring the North and South together through many means of reconciliation and employing his soldiers to do their duty in becoming good citizens of this country. You know, by like starting the KKK and stuff. Our culture is being destroyed and our history and heritage, both good and bad, are being extinguished by the radical left. And we can't let that happen. If only we had Robert E. Lee to command our troops in Afghanistan. That disaster would have ended in a complete and total victory many years ago. What an embarrassment we are suffering because we don't have the genius of a Robert E. Lee. So that's why we failed in Afghanistan. It's not the graveyard of empires. We just needed to resurrect that old racist.
Judd, the former president, you know, we refer to him as negative 45 over on our channel. He never fails to outdo his ignorance because the last thing we want, I thought he didn't like losers, right? I thought he didn't like people who lost. Robert E. Lee is the biggest loser in American history. Deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can be like, well, you know, it was really difficult. Like the North had so many more people. And so, yeah, then it was a really stupid thing to go against them. So you were a loser going in, you were a loser going out. You didn't have to fight. You didn't have to own the slaves. You didn't have to do any of the horrible, evil things that you did. So anyway, I'm glad that they took down the statue. I'm gonna guess that Robert E. Lee wouldn't have been able to, you know, take our troops to victory in Afghanistan. Like of all of the conflicts to say he could have saved, a protracted, brutal civil war clearly isn't his forte. Like that's not the one he could have done. You idiot, you dunce. But neither of them even care about Robert E. Lee. They both live in New York, or did. They're not interested in that. It's this weird cosplay. It's one thing if you actually love the Confederacy in 2021 and you have the flag hanging off the back of your Silverado or whatever. That's bad enough. That's sad enough. But pretending as a Northerner to be into it so that racist Southerners like you, that's even sadder, I think. Yeah. Any final thoughts?
No, John, actually, I think that's the take right there. I think that's the one that we need to pound through the discourse, because let's be real, Tucker Carlson, Fox News is not a person in that Manhattan block that you all love so much that actually loves you back, South. So you should just kind of let that go.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure Tucker Carlson like occasionally imagines himself on the patio of a plantation. You know, that's the only thing that can get him. I'm not going to finish the sentence, but anyway, that doesn't mean they want to live there. They don't care. They're not interested in your part of the country. God, getting played by like either getting played by rich real estate billionaires and Swanson heirs thinking that they care about you. Sad baby. Anyway, we're gonna take our second break. We have much more news coming, including a development in the Ahmaud Arbery case, as well as the LAPD being absolutely terrible online. So that'll be fun, but we're gonna read some of your comments in this break. Okay, let's see. Oh geez, the news is about to get even rougher. Okay. A former Georgia district attorney has been brought up in charges related to her seemingly intentional mishandling of the case of Ahmaud Arbery, a black man who was chased down and gunned down by a couple of racists as he jogged through a Brunswick neighborhood last year. We have a picture of the DA here. Great. Excellent County District Attorney Jackie Johnson turned herself into the Glynn County Sheriff's Office Wednesday morning after a grand jury returned an indictment on counts of obstruction and violations of oath by a public officer last week. She was apparently released on a $10,000 bond, with prosecutors alleging that she had used her position to delay the arrests of the man that chased down and killed the 25-year-old Arbery. So we're gonna have more details on this, but Ben, that wasn't even that long ago. It was one of the most egregious, needless deaths. The idea that someone in a position of public responsibility would try to like serve as a break on justice when it was so clear how needless this murder was. So good that they're at least pursuing some sort of charges.
No, absolutely. And we've seen so many times, I'm reminded of several other cases, Bob McCullough, prosecuting attorney there in Ferguson, Missouri. And we see so many instances where the people who claim to be bringing us justice are actively facilitating the role of a defense attorney for their friends in the police department. And this is why we always say it cannot be the case that a system can investigate itself and expect for us to get justice, because, well, in this case, the prosecutor there in the Ahmaud Arbery case, we'll see if justice can be had, but we have seen where she inserted herself to block justice for black life.
Yeah, and like theoretically, there are some parts of the system that are supposed to be kind of like oppositional. Like you have the police, they're obviously going to protect their own and they've got the union and all that. But then you have the judges and you have the but they all work together. They all know each other. They're all like protecting each other. It's a ridiculous system. We can't be surprised by the abuses when it operates the way it does. But I want to give you details on it in case you weren't following the initial news. So here's basically what is alleged to have happened. Johnson was the county's top prosecutor when Arbery was fatally shot last year. And one of the armed men who pursued him had worked for her as an investigator. Georgia Attorney General Chris Carr, a Republican, sought the indictment after requesting an investigation of possible misconduct by local prosecutors who failed to bring charges in the killing. The fact that she was involved in this when she so closely had been involved with one of the people, like you have to recuse yourself from that, but clearly didn't want to. And this all started because father and son Greg and Travis McMichael armed themselves with guns and gave chase in a pickup truck back on February 23rd of 2020 after they spotted Arbery running in their neighborhood just outside the port city of Brunswick. You can see pictures of them there. They told police they thought that Arbery was a burglar and Travis McMichael shot him in self-defense. No arrests were made until more than 2 months later. They got guns, they got in a truck. They chased down a guy who was just jogging, got in his face, and then claimed he was about to kill all of them, so they had to murder him.
I have personally experienced, and I'm sure others have, instances where scenarios are created, created by someone else. And it's incumbent upon us, especially if you're a black man or a black person in general or a brown person, to have to navigate your way around this situation that was created by white supremacy in real time. And unfortunately, our brother Ahmaud Arbery was not able to escape the scenario that was created by those three men and that was covered up by this this prosecuting attorney.
Yeah. So they're going to be facing state murder charges next month. They're also expected to stand trial on federal hate crime charges in February. But it's so egregious, and I hate, like, it's so see-through. It's designed to be this way, but that, so they want to say that they're standing their ground, you know, whether they explicitly say that or not. So to do that, you have to say that I feared that I was about to be killed. So they bring a deadly weapon up to someone, put it close to them, and then get to say, well, he could have taken it from me.
That's right. That's right.
No, I think if you bring a gun into a conflict where the other person isn't armed, like, all of the onus should be on you. Like, you decided to make that decision. You elevated to the possibility of someone being murdered. Like, first of all, they could have not been a murderous racist Kens that believed that they were the police of their region. They could have just not done any of that. But even if they had pursued him without the guns, does anyone think anyone would have died?
Exactly.
Does anyone think those three guys jump out and, like Shang-Chi, Ahmaud Arbery beats them all to death with his bare hands? Does anyone think that? They created the possibility of deadly violence. And there will always be people like the McMichaels that will do that. Zimmerman made it possible for people to die in the conflict because he chose to bring a gun and then get all scared that it might be taken from him and used on him. Like, and this is the most see-through thing ever. Everybody knows that that's what they're doing. The law is designed to allow for them to act that way. That's what cops do too. And so the question is, when are we actually going to exert some control of the system and change that and start putting at least a little bit of the responsibility on the people who choose to walk around with guns? Any final thoughts?
Yeah, no, man. A lot of this. If the shoes were on the other foot and we actually recognize white right-wing extremism for the threat that it is in this country, then what would America say about black people being so scared of gentrifiers running in our neighborhoods that we approach them the way Ahmaud Arbery was approached? Because if we really talk about the threat, the real threat is white right-wing supremacy in this country, as documented by the FBI. So should we be able to see someone running and assume that they are a threat to our community? That's what they need to think about when they do the same thing to black people.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a great hypothetical, even though obviously they wouldn't be okay with it. Like, obviously, we know that. Not for a second. Not for a second. There, it is just every bit of this is so washed in racial animus, in racial preconceptions. The fact that, like, when this story initially broke, I don't know if you remember the excuse that was given by a bunch of right-wing racists online. It was, okay, well, maybe he didn't like rob or whatever, but there's a video of him looking in a house that was being constructed. Yeah. So he was asking for it. Like, even though the McMichaels had nothing to do with any of that and didn't even know that. Yeah. Okay, if there was a house being constructed, I might look. You know why? Because I like shows like Fixer Upper. Maybe Ahmaud Arbery liked shows like Fixer Upper. He gets to look in a house that's being constructed. That is not that should not be a death sentence.
That's right.
It's just so ridiculous to the lengths that they'll go to excuse or to try to whitewash racist, murderous violence. Okay, so we have more cops for you. You know what? I'm just gonna remind you for just a sec, just to give a little bit of a breather. The Indisputable will, as always, be coming up after the damage report. So we've got this one more story. It's gonna close out our first hour. After that, we'll take a short break. We're gonna have some more news for you. But right after that, Dr. Rashad Ritchie takes over. Ben Carollo of Galaxy Brain on Twitch will be joining him. Joe Collins III will be there for debate, and that will be available both at Twitch and youtube.com/indisputabletyt. And another reminder, if you haven't already subscribed to Indisputable, which I think that you probably have because they are rocketing up in subscriptions, you definitely should, because the multicast of the live stream will be ending after this week. So you're gonna wanna be a subscriber so you can get notifications and all that. Or at least get as many notifications as YouTube will allow you to get, because they don't really. But anyway, with that, why don't we move into our last story? It's an amazing investigation by the Brennan Center for Justice into the LAPD's apparent strategy of trolling and scrubbing the social media account of people that they approach, that they talk to. Why? Well, we're gonna give them a chance to argue for it, but it seems pretty ridiculous to me. So they have copies of these what are called field interview cards that police complete when they question civilians. They reveal that LAPD officers are instructed to record a civilian's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and other social media accounts alongside basic biographical information. No word on TikTok yet, but I wouldn't put it past them. The copies of the cards obtained by the Brennan Center also reveal that police are instructed to ask civilians for their social security numbers and are advised to tell interviewees that it must be provided under federal law. The Brennan Center has confirmed that they have not been able to find literally any law that would require someone to give a cop their social security number, but the cops are just lying and saying that. So there's an internal memo that shows that the police chief, Michael Moore, told employees that it was critical to collect this data, the social media data, for use in investigations, arrests, and prosecutions, and warned that supervisors would review cards to ensure they were complete. They said that similar to a nickname or an alias, a person's online persona or identity used for social media can be highly beneficial to investigators. That's according to Charlie Beck, former LAPD chief. So we're gonna get into this more, but the idea, this is not just people that have been arrested or people that are on trial. This is like people that cops talk to. They are going to try to get your Instagram account, your Facebook account, your Twitter account, and then just look and see what you've said. What do you think about that, Ben?
I think that we better recognize the creeping fascism as it's happening in real time. We were kind of talking off air about people not seeing these things happening as it's happening. But folks, they're building the robot dogs from Black Mirror. They are monitoring all of your social media even already. And now they're just blatantly gonna come and tell you that you gotta give them their social security number and your Instagram account. I think we better recognize where the real threat is, and it's not in some chip in the vaccine.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah. Yeah. So remember when we were rightfully freaking out because in Arizona they were stopping people that they thought might be undocumented immigrants and asking them for their papers or whatever?
That's right.
Yeah. That was unacceptable. And this is unacceptable. Why does a cop need to know what I post on Facebook? It's pictures of my dog. Does he need to see those? What if I tweet about politics? The cop need to know that? If I post Instagram photos of me at Runyon or something, why does a cop need that? Seriously, I get why they want it, because they are one of the tentacles of the machine. That's why they want any and all information. But why should they have it? And why should we allow it? So especially, by the way, when it's the LAPD. So I'm gonna remind you of a few things they've been up to. Last October, prosecutors filed criminal charges against three officers in the LAPD's Metro Division, accusing them of using the cards to falsely label civilians as gang members after stopping them. That unit also had a history of stopping Black drivers at disproportionately high rates, and according to the LA Times, has more frequently filled out the cards for Black and Latino residents they stopped. Because of course, they can do it with whoever they want and not do it with others, and they'll just use their discretion. They're baked in implicitly racist discretion. So these are the people that we're gonna trust. Those who are using your Twitter accounts to label you as gang members, they're part of the LAPD. There's a good chance they're gang members. But they, can I go through their social media, their private Facebook groups to label them as members of gangs, Ben? I kind of feel like it's not gonna go both ways in that particular way.
If you think about that non-binding resolution that came from Josh Hawley, one of the parts of it was specifically saying that they wanted to protect the rights of police officers to not be doxxed. And here we are with police officers saying, not only are we gonna dox you, we're gonna ask you to do it in real time and tell you that it's a federal law for you to give us your social security number. And John, thank you for saying that. Let's be sure, some of the most malevolent gang members in this country wear uniforms and call themselves cops.
Mm-hmm.
That's
100%. And by the way, it seems important to point out, more than half of the civilians stopped by Metro officers and documented in the cards were not arrested or cited. Now you might think, oh good. No, that means they are gathering this data for people who don't even merit being cited by the incredibly low standards of the LAPD. And they still have that information. What do you think? They're throwing that away afterward? Oh, well, they didn't do anything wrong, so I guess I don't need any of this data. No, no, you're still in the system. Again and again, what are they using that for? They're being so casual about it. They're gathering it for people. They have no idea if they even need to talk to these people. They're just gathering it up, sucking it up, sucking it up. Now, there are some potentially even worse implications. So Hamid Khan of the Stop LAPD Spying Coalition noted that the LAPD also shares data with federal law enforcement agencies through so-called fusion centers and has previously used predictive policing technologies that rely on data collected by officers in the field and which can criminalize communities of color. So these are separate concerns. Now think about how they combine with the social media thing. So they take data they don't need. Are they distributing it to the feds, to other police departments? Are you just gonna trust them? And by the way, they believe in predictive policing. They believe that they can use information, demographic information, past arrests, where you live, that sort of thing to decide whether you're a potential threat. You don't think that they're using your Twitter and your Instagram and that sort of thing? Like if they were already getting in trouble for the predictive policing, it's only gonna be more sophisticated with more all-encompassing access to your data. And the LAPD, Ben, so let me give you one more detail. So this is in relation to, we already knew about this. So Geofedia is a social media monitoring site that police departments use and others use. So one internal document, which the Brennan Center found, it's undated but appeared to be several years old, listed keywords and hashtags that the LAPD appear to be monitoring through this social media tool. And they were almost exclusively related to Black Lives Matter and similar leftist protests. It included BLMLA, Say Her Name, Sandra Bland, Tamir Rice. There's one about Donald Trump. It has the F word in it. And the names of people killed by LA police that prompted major protests. None of the hashtags on the list were for right-wing demonstrations or far-right movements, which have grown increasingly violent in recent years and have killed cops in California, by the way. But so they were already searching for this stuff. All of this feels like it's going to combine in a way that makes the already terrible predilections of the LAPD even worse. Giving them more access to your data just seems like a terrible idea. And I can understand why a lot of civilians who are stopped by the LAPD would be scared into doing it. They might think that they have to legally when clearly there's no law requiring that they do that. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, John, you said that they are the tentacles of the machine, right? I'm thinking of the Leviathan. They are the tip of the spear of the monster that is the police state that is required to maintain the immense bigotry and barbarity of this system. And this is just like the leading edge of technology doing the same thing that they've been doing since time immemorial, which is taking from the people and protecting the powerful from the people instead of protecting and serving the people.
100%. I just want to briefly mention, a lot of people have been talking about this. Portland announced that they will not be enforcing a citywide vaccine mandate on the police force. City employees are supposed to get vaccinated. It was going to apply to them and apparently they said they weren't going to abide by it. And so Portland is backing off. Mayor Wheeler's like, well, you know, the disappointment. We really wish our cops could be vaccinated, but they're not gonna be. They're there to protect people. They might be spreading COVID to them. That's cool. Cops can do whatever they want. They're better than you and I. Did you know that? Pretty clear from the news. Anyway, okay, so let's see. We have like another minute more. I'm gonna read a couple of comments before we close out this first hour. Let's see. Feral Dragon says, Matt Gaetz still refuses to visit his district since a chick threw a drink at him. LOL, he knows we hate him. I did not hear about that story, but I'm sure he knows that his district is probably not big fans of him. Andrew Larson says, if I put a child in danger, I go to jail. DeSantis is endangering every person in his state, lock him up. Yeah, they get away with basically anything they want. Let's see, Moondragon did send in a super chat about what Portland is doing with the police force. Thank you, Moondragon, for letting us know about that. Okay. Stickman Grit says, I was just as outraged as you. No, I don't. Maybe I'm forgetting. I apologize if I misconstrued what was in your super chat. Thank you for letting us know. And finally, Penguin says, Nazis in Germany fly the Confederate flag because the Nazi flag is illegal.
Oof. There it is.
Jeez. Okay, well, let's see. Bisk says, subscribe for 2 months. Says, John, why do you and Brett share a brush? You don't even have hair. Kind of weird if you ask me. I don't even know what Brett said that caused you to say that, but I am sorry for both of us. But anyway, more news to come. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back on the other side of this break.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.